I've enjoyed playing here. This has been over 20 years that I've been coming to Royal Melbourne. And this way golf should be played.
We love coming down under.
Look, it's phenomenal to play. The quality of the golf's been great. But the enthusiasm of the people has been the thing that's just been amazing.
Tier of courses that I'm willing to shave my neck for in Kingston Heath in Victoria. Get me out of bed to shave.
Especially somewhere like Australia in the Sand Belt, and I have so many great memories of being down there.
Hello and welcome back to Australian Golf Passport. We've got another listener questions episode to clean up on the batch of questions we got a few weeks ago. And joining me to wade through those, as always, Matt Molica. Hey, Matty.
Hi, Scott. Good to chat with you. Really pumped for a big episode today. Some fantastic questions from the listeners and really keen to get your answers to a good number of them. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, I've been curious what you're going to say about some of these.
Yeah, there's some thought-provoking ones. Thank you to everyone who sent them in. I think we're going to answer every single one that got sent into us. So
I might have misplaced one or two, given it's been a few weeks since we got them, but I think we're answering them all. And I'm usually one to wing life, but I've actually made notes. I'm that excited about some of these questions. I didn't want to whiff on my answers, like when we were asked for the Australian Augusta and we didn't say Royal Canberra.
Oh, yeah.
So, but mate, some news of the week to kick us off that's near and dear to both our hearts. Yet another legendary performance by Rich McAfee, who has won the Australian Hickory Championship at Woodlands and Kingston Heath this week by 14 shots. He did it with a set of hickories that he'd owned for about 4 days at that point, the first set of hickories he's ever owned. He was 3 over after 3 the first day and then played the next 33 holes in 1 over. It's your typical Rich McAfee offensive how good he is at golf sort of story.
I told a friend of the results and the first thing he came back to me with was, can't he leave something for someone else?
No.
Yeah, just remarkable. I'm not sure Rich has played a dozen rounds with hickories in his entire life. As you said, he hadn't had the clubs for very long. Brutal day around Kingston Heath for day two of that championship. Cold, windy. They got rained on. He's a marvel. He's a marvel. Justin Ryan is brilliant with those clubs. I think he ended up taking out the net title.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think he might even have done on a previous occasion to add to his title at Maldon from years ago. Some strong competitors there. Luke Iper, who's no slouch with the hickories, he did a 100-hole hike with hickories years ago and don't think he shot anything worse than 85, and I don't think he lost a ball in that venture. So I was talking with him about it briefly afterwards, and he said he just couldn't believe that Rich had played so well. So congrats to Rich.
Mm.
Fantastic.
Recently spent a month traveling around Ireland and Scotland whinging to us about how bad his knee was and then shot 67 around the old course as well.
Yeah. He's a marvel. They should...
But then celebrated that round so successfully in the various bars in St. Andrews. I think he had 21 points the next day. So that made me feel at least, you know, we can't back it up.
We can relate to that part of the story. So
yeah. Now I'm hereby calling out Golf Australia. What else is new? So the World Hickory Championships are on the 10th to the 12th of October at Prestwick, Western Gales and Kilmarnock in Western Scotland. Golf Australia needs to put the hand in their pocket, some of the money that's left over after the logo redo, and they need to send Rich to represent Australia at that, because he'll bloody win that by 14 as well.
So he's, well, look, we're going to put a tiny bit of pressure on him. He's a chance to win that. There's a legendary European hickory player who I follow on Instagram. Any hickory nuts out there, if you're not following Paolo Quirici, please do so, because you'll enjoy his content. He has won it a couple of times before and he would be a pretty short price option in the betting for that title this year. Alan Grieve is going, and I think he's contested that before. He'd be a shout at that. But yeah, James Sutherland, if you're listening, you want to just tip in to send Rich there and fly the flag for Australia? I could think of worse ways to spend money.
Yeah. Sadly, Lloyd Cole's famous, awesome story about visiting the Melbourne Sandbelt for the first time has disappeared off the internet because it was on Golf Travel and Leisure. But there was a great, his great opening line in that article about, you know, Rich McAfee's the kind of bastard who plays off plus one and you still feel like you're getting robbed. And it hasn't changed. That was 15 years ago. It hasn't changed.
I've got to try and find that article. That's a great, yeah. It was a great piece. I'm disappointed that that's now difficult to find.
Mm. Yeah, Lloyd might have a copy he can share with us. But actually, Lloyd's back down here in December on tour, and we should have him on the pod then.
Ooh.
He's such great value.
Some of our younger listeners will not know who Lloyd Cole is. If I can indulge myself for about 45 seconds. Very, very early on in my life on Golf Club Atlas, I was getting these messages from a fellow forum member sounding me out for information on a trip to Melbourne to play golf. And I thought, oh, that's funny. This guy has the same name as a famous British musician, singer, songwriter. And after about the fifth message, I got something about, I'll have to give you some tickets. And I thought, oh, I'm actually speaking to the Lloyd Cole, not some fat cat on the east coast of the US with the same name as him. So, yeah, he's a passionate golfer. Do you have an ace at Barnboogle on one of his previous trips? Do I remember that right?
I think he may have.
16th, I think. So yeah, that's a great suggestion. He'd be a good guest. He's been down here at least.
Yeah, I found it actually. I found the article on Lloyd's website.
Ah, well done.
So the opening line wasn't about Rich. The opening line is great. I'll reread that as well. But I'll read the section about Rich. And he's talking about how offensively good he is, and he says, "I can't think of another instance in which a one handicap golfer so fully deserved to be called a sandbagger or a bandit," which is the term we prefer in the British Commonwealth. Rich shot an easy 69, and the generous six shots I received were not nearly enough. Nevertheless, Kingston Heath is a course that can beat you without precipitating tears. It is simply a joy to play. This is, you'll remember, the opening line as soon as you hear it, you'll remember it. The bartender at the Prince of Wales looks like Ray Davies wrote Lola for her. She's clearly not always used the ladies. At 6 feet tall and with bleach blonde hair, she cuts a striking figure. And in a voice that is indeed a deep dark brown, she tells me they're all out of Cooper's Red. It's just an awesome, awesome start to a great story. We should include the link in the show notes.
Yeah, we will. We will definitely. So
that's a very self-indulgent news of the week, but I'm so happy for Rich. There's genuinely not a better bloke in Aussie golf. Yeah. 11 Kingston Heath Club champs, assorted other World Club championships, etc. So, yeah, just another little notch on his belt, feather in his cap.
It'll be another little part of the movie they make about him at the end of it all. All right, let's get into the questions.
Let's do it.
So Luke Tynes, first cab off the rank for us today. Probably direct the lion's share of the answer to you on this one. If you could reroute one Sydney public course, which would it be?
It's a timely one because we've talked in our early episodes this time last year, the Sydney Lord Mayor, Clover Moore, was kicking off about trying to get Moore Park cut in half so that the people that live in the absolute planning debacle that is Green Square could have somewhere to get outdoors. So it's funny, we talked at the time that Clover's complicit as hell in that disaster and the fact that those people have no outdoor space around their homes and their apartments. So then about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, the other person who is up to their neck in that disaster was the New South Wales Premier of the day, Bob Carr, just out of nowhere and with apropos of nothing, wrote this op-ed in the SMH, the Sydney Morning Herald, calling for Moore Park to be given back to the people and get these elite golfers, which is funny, Bob Carr calling someone else an elite, but, you know, it needs to not be 18 holes. It needs not to be all this big land reserved for 200 people a day, etc. I feel like it's just a matter of time now until Moore Park does get cut in half. it's on two paddocks as it is. There's 11 or 12 holes on the main paddock, five or six on the outside paddock. I just think it's, you know, it feels inevitable to me. The New South Wales government, the long-running Liberal government, who delighted in torturing Clover Moore, is out of power now. Liberal government's come in. They're probably going to have at least 8 years, two terms. It just feels to me like it's a matter of time now. And so I think if I was going to reroute any public course in Sydney, I'd get ahead of all of that drama and urgency when it's enforced on them. I reckon you could build a top 70 in Australia, nine-hole course on that main paddock. As I said, it's currently got, as well as the driving range and whatnot, which prints money, it's got 11 or 12 holes on it. Some of them are a bit snug. There's a couple of dog legs that spoon each other. You could, it's got some really good terrain. All the best terrain at Moore Park is on that main paddock. You could build a really cool nine-hole there. And I think if we fast forward 5 years, 10 years, that might be what Moore Park is. It just, there's not enough of a groundswell of people fighting for it. You know, that part of Sydney is well appointed with private clubs. So a lot of the people who might have influence, you know, are kind of tucked away in private club land and probably aren't motivated to fight for Moore Park so much. So, yeah, for me, it's Moore Park. Not saying it needs a redesign or a rerouting, but I think if you were to turn those 11 or 12 holes into nine, you could do something really cool.
Okay. Weren't tempted to take your architectural nous to the coast?
Possibly. I mean, the coast is another one that since they built all those apartments at Little Bay, there's a couple of weird holes, long walks, back-to-back par threes, 90-degree dog legs to fit everything in. So the coast would be another one where I would say, you know, maybe like a 12-hole course would fit nicely. Of course, Greg Norman had the idea, didn't he? Take yes. The coast and take St. Michael's and Randwick and reduce the amount of holes. He probably would have done a reasonable job.
If he had Bob helping, he definitely would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was pre-Bob. I'm not sure. I played with it. Actually, there's a guy I played with at New South who must be in his 80s, and he was the captain of the coast. I'm sure I've talked about this on the pod before, maybe. He was the captain of the coast when that vote happened, and he said it got within about four votes of getting up.
Oh, wow.
So the St. Mick's members voted for it, and the coast, it was literally within a handful, and it went down. Both clubs needed to vote it up, so...
Wow. Okay. I never knew it was that close run.
No, it was, yeah, it was like, yeah, very, very close. Tom Beachy asks us, Maddie, could you do a State of Origin best holes 1 to 18, Victoria versus rest of Oz?
Easily and happily. It feels like it could be an episode in its own.
Yeah. If we did it, I think it would be, but I think like it might be 10 and 8 and the episode finishes halfway through. Don't you think Victoria would just smoke the rest of Australia?
No. Right. I was starting to get scared.
Okay.
Because I very quickly thought, well, RA number 3 and Barnboogle Dunes number 4 and New South Wales number 5 and the rest of the country skips out of the blocks pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And
it may be an episode where you argue the case of the Vic candidates. I argue the case of rest of Australia and we have an arbiter in that decides which one of us has made the most compelling case.
Okay.
Could be fun. I was thinking that might be like, you know, the 90s World Series Cup cricket that Victoria versus Victoria A was the best competition that could be. You know, like Australia versus Australia A back then. I'm heartened that you actually think the rest of the country has a chance.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah, there's some obvious contenders for the best seventh, the best 10th, the best 18th that are not in Victoria. Best starter as well. So
yeah. All right. So Tom, let's say thanks for the idea. We're going to do that at some point.
So I've met Tom, and we will have a game together at some stage. He's moved down to Melbourne in the last 12 months. So we might talk about that while we share 18 holes.
Very good.
See what sort of side we can come up with for the Victorians. All right, Henry C. has our next question. Will there be a Northern Beaches of Sydney episode? Manly, Eleanora, Monash, and the like?
There could be. It probably depends how long this podcast goes for, how many episodes we do. I think there'll be a point. It's probably, you know, it's not absolute pointy end of Australian golf, but it's extremely civilized. Eleanora's lovely, really good club, has probably four or five really delightful holes. I remember being disappointed a bit when I played Eleanora. I looked at the card and saw a ton of, you know, there's literally four or five sub 280 meter par fours, sub 300 par fours. And I thought, how good is this? Like, can't wait to play these holes. Maddie, every single one of them is uphill. Every single one of them is uphill. And so it's kind of like, well, that's a bit of a tease. Like, they're not really, you know, you're hitting driver and it's hitting an upslope and stopping. And so that was disappointing. But Eleanora does have, yeah, some really cool land up on the Northern Beaches. It's got a massive site. I think it was founded by Royal Sydney members well back in the day when the Upper Northern Beaches was where they went for holidays and weekends.
Okay.
I guess the same way that Long Island Golf was founded by rich Manhattanites. So, yeah, Eleanor's really cool. Manly, I must admit, I don't care for at all. Lots of layup drives with, you know, creeks and whatnot crossing fairways. Very flat. It's on a number of paddocks. It's, well, I'm sure it's delightful place to be a member. The members are really great value. I played against them in Interclub a couple of times and they're a really good group, but course isn't so much for me. And Monash, I haven't played since it got redone. I played it as a teenager in some junior events. I mean, I grew up across before motorways. That was 2 hours from where I grew up. But I played it a couple of times, I think. And I want to say either Harrison or James Wiltshire has done work there recently. I'm keen to get back there. But I mean, like, I live near Cronulla. So I basically live as far as you can live in Sydney from that. So, but I've got to start stepping out a bit more. So maybe I'll try and hit that. But yeah, look, Northern Beaches, we might get there. If we can find a good guest.
I have a good guest potential that'll run by you off air, particularly if you're going to include Avondale, Terry Hills and Pymble in that lot. So
see if I can get Steve Menzies to come on the podcast, Northern Beaches Royalty.
Okay.
You have no idea who that is, do you?
He's a rugby league player.
Bang. Well done, Matty.
I think I remember him.
5 points. Yeah. I think very good golfer too. Certainly Terry Hills is a good show. I mean, Terry Hills is possibly the best course. Probably it or Eleanora would be the best course on the Northern Beaches.
Okay.
I want to say. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Matty, the gas man. Which is, I don't know if this is one of my friends stitching me up. That is a nickname I have that dates back about 8 years to a Bucks weekend in Port Macquarie where I tried to re-enter a pub I'd been excluded from through a back locked door. And I knocked over about six barbecues that had been brought undercover and the gas. And anyhow, look, it ended badly for me. And I don't know. Maybe this person genuinely goes by the gas man, but I just feel like this is one of my mates stitching me up. But the gas man asks, the top 10 Australian courses with aesthetics and conditioning as the only criteria for selection. I've got a couple of candidates, but I want to hear what comes to your mind.
Well, I reckon aesthetics and conditioning is different for different people. And I reckon it's important to establish that at the outset, because what someone loves and someone thinks is beautiful is almost repulsive to another person. And we hear Clates talking about fairways that are perfect to hit off that aren't necessarily perfect to look at. So he loves the ball-turf club interaction of fescue that's a bit thinner, and there'd be lots of people that come away from Barnboogle and don't particularly care for it and think that Metro flogs it in terms of conditioning. I'm in a minority that doesn't like the aesthetic of the Australian. Some people go there and think it's the bee's knees. If I was to, I don't know if I'm helping the gas man out there at all, but if you said there's 10 courses around the country that within 2 weeks of getting a phone call from Golf Australia could host a tournament because they're always in tip-top shape, I reckon that's easier to answer. That doesn't really get to aesthetics and beauty, but it certainly talks about consistently high grades of conditioning. And there's a few obvious candidates in that bracket for me. And I think they're Kingston Heath, Victoria, and the Moona course at the National, and Royal Melbourne probably as a fourth. They're the first few that come to mind. At their heights of conditioning, they're unbelievable, and they never seem to dip too low.
It's funny you say that about the fescue fairways, you know, the love and the hate. Remember the first time I ever played the old course, coming around the corner on 17, and there was a ball just in the fairway and a ball just in the rough. And I was walking with the guys playing with who had hit it down a similar line to me, and I said, oh, come on, I hope mine's in the fairway, and kind of laughed at him. He said, I hope yours is in the fairway too. He said, I hate those fairways. I can't hit a ball off them. He says, I hope mine's the one in the light rough because there'll be some grass under it. And it's a perfect example. And lo and behold, his was where he wanted it and so was mine. But yeah, it was, I remember it, however old I was then, 25, just being like, what? But yeah, different strokes for different folks. Yeah. So aesthetics and condition, top courses. I've probably lent more into aesthetics than you did into condition. But I want to say New South Wales and Cape Wickham are so aesthetically charming that, you know. Yeah. Likewise, I'm going to make an exception and say a nice thing about National Old. National Old, I think they keep in nice, firm, tight condition. And on a good day, that view out over Bass Strait's pretty incomparable. I think Elliston is just in such good condition. And for an inland site, the views out into the hills of the Upper Hunter is pretty singular. Hamilton Island, again, not a course I find myself saying nice things about very often, but that's, I don't recall it being in necessarily, you know, showstopper condition. It is in the tropics. But again, that's like there's a view to make your jaw drop everywhere you look. So leaving aside the quality of the golf course, it's there. Again, my ignorance of Western Australia comes in, but the cut, maybe.
The cut's a beautiful spot. There's parts of it that don't feel that good at all on the second half of the front nine. But when you're on the 12th tee and you're on this elevated position and the coast's off to your right and you've got this big sweeping downhill dogleg right, and how much am I going to cut off and where's the wind coming from? Can I make that carry? And the waves are crashing off to the side. And if you've got an afternoon round going and the sun's setting, that'd be a heavenly spot.
Mm-hmm.
Karrinup would be, the golfers from WA would probably universally suggest Karrinup's consistently presented in great shape as well. Probably deserves a bit of a shout there.
Yep.
Every time I've been there, it's just been flawless. So
I think we've named 10 courses there.
Yeah, that's a good mix.
Alan Ritchie asks, any notable Australian holes with internal OB or walls that come into play?
There are three that jump to mind for me straight away. OB, the left side of the 17th at Portsea, is probably the best strategic use of OB that I can think of. That's not in, well, that's not internal OB. Sorry, I'm just reading his question a little more accurately. So that is a fence line. It's a boundary line. And you drive closer to that fence line and you get a little more advantageous rollout and position for approach into that par four.
I think what Alan might be referencing, Alan is a clubmate of mine. There's part of the proposal. So the range at New South's always been in play. And it's recently they've been dabbling with making it OB on 18.
Okay.
And then without giving too much away, because we're probably not meant to at this point, the McKenzie and Ebert plan for that hole is actually really adventurous and cool. They've taken, you know, Royal Liverpool, a few other good examples from the UK, and they're proposing to build a sandstone wall that will separate the range and the 18th, and to set up the strategy of the hole so that challenging the corner of the wall, you'll get a kick toward the green and it'll maybe put you in range of getting home in two to try and make what at the moment is, you know, it's a big compromise and a bit of a blight on the course, to try and actually take that and, instead of being embarrassed about it and hiding it, just to embrace it and make it the strategy. I think that's a really cool, it's a really cool idea.
Okay.
Thoughts?
Yeah, steering into it can, you can't escape it. So you might as well use it in the most advantageous way that you can. If you, you're in trouble on both sides, aren't you? Because you can't go ploughing drives towards the 10th green, and you don't want lots of golfers coming up the last hole just sort of jumping the fence and wading onto the practice fairway. Yeah, you're a little bit stuck. But okay,
the key will be making sure there's enough width on the right that you can bail. You know, 10 greens only really in play downwind in a southerly. So yeah, you just need there to be enough room right that you're not, which has sort of been, so another, a similar example that I've just, is 14 at Bonnie Doon, which again is the range, and Ogilvy Clayton, trying to think what was the firm called at the time they did the work.
OCCM.
Like more name changes than Prince. No, it was Ogilvy Clayton at that point.
Oh, okay.
It was, yep. But so they built this great diagonal out of bounds that you had to drive over to try and stay on the right, get the angle into the green, par five, like the 18th at New South. But then the left-hand side got so thick with the, that was like an ESBS zone they couldn't really do much with, and maybe they could have done a bit more than they did do, but it got, it was like lost, it was guaranteed lost ball. And so then you've got this 40 yards of fairway, and it, a lot of people would just, would just knock a, like a 3-iron down into the middle and stay safe. But it had, on paper, it was a really great strategic decision. Hopefully New South can nail that. Could be a cool way to finish the round.
Yeah.
But yeah, members are still mulling over the, giving feedback to the plan, and hopefully we might have some news later this year on go, no go and potential timing for that.
Okay. There is a wall that TWP built at Sandhurst.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of left side, back side of a mid-length par three green. So sort of waist high stone wall.
Yeah.
Is it, there's internal OB at Cheltenham, the nine holer next door to Vic. There's aerial internal OB. You can't be adventurous cutting the corner on a blind dog leg left there. I think it's the 8th from memory, 7th, 8th, can't remember. OB behind the second green at Gunnamatta was the other one that came to mind.
Yes, that's cool. Not internal again, but it is good OB. And behind the road hole green at Lonsdale.
Yep.
Speaking of the sandstone walls, you just reminded me there was a great episode of the Fried Egg podcast. It must have been 3 or 4 years ago now, but it was Guy, I think he might have been the super at Somerset Hills, and he'd previously been an assistant super at Merion. And he was saying that, of course, Merion has some really fantastic sandstone, not walls, but kind of retaining walls on creeks and whatnot. And he was saying the super there would always say to the crew, hands up if you built a sandstone wall before. And of course, everyone would be desperate to who'd done it, put their hands up, thinking they're going to get to build one. He'd always get the guys who'd never built one to build it because he wanted it to look a bit wonky and aged. And so the guys who were good at it, it would just look too schmick. So he'd, you know, It's like Tom Doak's thing about how do you build an interesting green? You get hire the biggest idiot in the village and ask him to make it flat. So, yeah, anyway, not really relevant to anything, but it's a very good episode. Well, so maybe, again, another one to put in the show notes if we can find it.
Okay, I'll look for that.
Now, 7 Mile Golf Shop has asked a question that 7 Mile Golf Shop is probably quite invested in the answer to. How much Angus and Grace is too much? Could never have too much Angus and Grace, could you, Matt?
You can't, can you? They've got all bases covered. You could go shorts, pants, polos,
skirt,
zips, skirts,
golf daddy hat,
sleeveless tops, bucket hats, dimple and divot brushes, NLU range, 7 Mile Beach range, the mock turtles, the mock turtlenecks look really, really good. I've probably got one or two too many navy garments from Angus and Grace already.
I saw a photo of you recently just in all navy Angus and Grace.
Yep. Put Dustin Johnson to shame. Just the monochrome, just wham, all of it.
And now without talking yourself up, you were telling me last time you went out to play golf, you were approached by quite a number of people who want to know where your strides were from.
Yeah, it always happens. If I go top to toe Angus and Grace, doesn't matter where I go, yeah, it's guaranteed I'll get half a dozen people ask me, what is that? Where did you get it? How can I get some? Yeah.
Yep.
Particularly the pants, but they're brilliant. As we've said in pretty much every episode we've recorded, every golfer should have some in their wardrobe.
Indeed.
The skirts, I would have to ask Matt, actually. I don't know because I haven't been in the store and my wife hasn't pulled the trigger on any golf purchases as yet, in part because she's a non-golfer. But I assume that I assume the skirts are the same material as the pants.
Great question. I haven't tried them on.
I'll have to ask Matt. I did have a throwback to you at about 10 past five one morning when I was getting ready to leave the house under the cover of darkness, and I didn't want to wake my wife up, and I was in the wardrobe, clothes pantry, as she would call it, and I was just feeling, no, that's not.
Yep. Yes, you knew it when you felt them. It.
Yeah. It was funny. I had a chuckle. I thought, yeah, Scott's right. There you go.
Very good.
Don't know if that answers 7 Mile Golf Shop's question, but it's a good ad read. There you go.
And the added cool thing about the 7 Mile range through Angus and Grace is the 7 Mile logo. One of the great logos in golf.
Yeah.
Of course, shout out Nick Mills and Sandbilt Studios who designed that logo. Yeah, there's really cool stuff. And I think, you know, the combination of Angus and Grace with supporting 7 Mile Beach and Nick's logo, yeah, too good. There's hats and there's Q-zips and there's whatnot in the 7 Mile Golf Shop range. AngusandGraceGoGolfing.com, Angus and Grace Go Golfing on Instagram, Angus and Grace Go Golfing in William Street, Paddington in Sydney. And if you're in Sydney, Matt Burns from Angus and Grace has been doing a weekly game at Bondi at 7 o'clock on a Thursday morning. So anyone who's around that neck of the woods, 7 o'clock pretty much every Thursday. I think he's pretty good at posting on Insta if he's not going to be doing it. Group goes out, plays 9 holes real quick, gets off to work, especially this time of year when it's getting a bit warmer and the days are getting longer. Great way to start the day.
It's well and truly daylight for Sydney at 7 o'clock in the morning, isn't it, now?
Mm, absolutely, yeah.
So
no, we're good.
Nice. All right. I want to get up there and do that Bondi Diggers 9-hole one day. I'd love to do it with you and Matt. So Gavin Armstrong's question to us, ideas for some low-cost weekend getaways that will fit in between the bigger trips.
Mm. I love this one because it got me grinding on some things that I want to do or things that I've quite enjoyed. And it's good to talk about courses that aren't, you know, several hundred dollars and, you know, bucket list experiences.
This is the part where we froth about Port Fairy as well, isn't it?
Port Fairy's on here. Yeah, so Port Fairy in and of itself.
Good. Just
great weekend away. But you could also play Peterborough and you could play Warrnambool, home of Mark Leishman. You know, you could stop on the way down and play Anglesey if you want to see some Kangas and see some Vern Morecambe.
Yep.
So
there's a nine-holer right on the water at Apollo Bay, which is not architecturally remarkable, but a beautiful sight and a great place to stop on that drive as well. So, and that's going to cost you, Apollo Bay is going to cost you almost nothing to go and play. Mm. So
yeah, so let's not beat around the bush. Port Fairy is on the list, but so New South Wales South Coast, you got Mollymook Hilltop. And then you've got the Mollymook Beachside course, which used to be really rudimentary, but has been redone. Heard some good reports about that now. And the surf club is basically the beachside golf course's clubhouse. And it's a great place to sit and have a feed and beers and watch people surf. Then obviously Naruma and, you know, maybe Club Catalina at Batemans Bay or Tura Beach. The stuff down there is kind of punches pretty strong for how remote it is. Obviously, the Murray River is just always another similar option. Drivable from Sydney, Melbourne and Canberra is helpful for that. Northern New South Wales, I like Mwollumbah, Teevan Valley, which is the Craig Parry nine-hole thing that's, I think, almost maybe a little bit sweetens Covey. Okay. Ocean Shores and Coolangatta Tweed, I guess technically a Gold Coast course, but it's on the New South Wales side of the border and it doesn't feel like the Gold Coast. It feels like, you know, it's remarkable when you cross from Coolangatta to Tweed Heads how immediately different everything feels, and it's on the good side of the border. So love those. You could rip up into the central west of New South Wales, go to Mudgee, Duntry League. You can choose another one. We've talked before about Bathurst being the only course I know of where you can whack one over a prison exercise yard to try and hit the green on a par four. So there's a bit of good sand greens golf out in the central west if you want to test that out. Yeah, some good options there. And then heading north from Sydney on kind of the upper reaches of the central coast / bottom of the Hunter, you could spend a weekend in close proximity playing Magenta Shores as your big kind of big ticket for the weekend. Shelley Beach is a pretty basic golf course, but in an incredible spot right on the beach. Really cool. And Belmont, which we've talked about before, the home of Jack Newton, kind of real kind of linksy for New South Wales latitude, pretty linksy. That'd be a great weekend and it wouldn't break the bank either. So any of those, I think, would be a sensational trip and, you know, take the right company and eat some good food, drink some good wine or beer or scotch or whatever it is you like to drink. And
yeah, going to go to a nice place and have some good golf and not wreck the bank account.
Mm.
Picking off the co-stars of the Mornington Peninsula is a good way to go as well. You can go and play Flinders. You can go and play the Dunes. Don't have to go to the National or not even St. Andrew's Beach, but St. Andrew's Beach is certainly not a budget breaker by any measure.
And lots of other course.
Yeah, I was going to say, either stay at the RACV or stay somewhere else in an Airbnb down on the peninsula. You can play RACV next door to the National and sort of get a National old light experience. Yeah.
Rosebud.
Flinders down that way as well is really worth a look. Rosebud Country Club is enjoyable and good to have played and then sit at home in the summer and watch the TPS series go around there and be familiar with the holes. Yep. Lots of good food and wine options down in that neck of the woods as well. You could go inland Victoria. I was just searching while you were starting to talk about the northern the north of Sydney trip. Visitors pay $50 for 18 holes at Horsham. And Horsham's a really, really cool inland course with lots of interesting holes. It's quite well presented. They seem to have a predilection for planting too many trees on that property. They lost an awful lot with a fire that probably did the course no end of good. And it seems some of their membership sort of set about trying to make the same mistakes again, unfortunately. But yeah, $50 for a round there is a bargain, and you drive through the Grampians and past some great wineries on the way up to there from Melbourne. That's a 3-hour trip there. So yeah, plenty of options. Don't have to get on a plane. Don't have to look for $200 green fees to have a good time.
Yeah. All right. Bomb and Gouge asks, would love to know the optimum time of year to do a Tassie trip, including the optimum itinerary. Would like to do a trip for my 40th in 2025.
Well, I have 3 days down there this November around the time of the Melbourne Cup for a mate's belated 50th. After being very excited to go down to Barnboogle for the first time in a few years and excited to go away with the birthday boy and six mutual friends, I started to get a little bit concerned because the two times that I've been down there in November previously, I have been absolutely sandblasted. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was bad luck, but I just hope I don't get the same sort of experience this time around in early November. I remember hearing Richard Sattler talking about guys doing a little bit of construction on the course, particularly the 10th around November time, having goggles on their faces and hankies and towels wrapped around their heads while they were digging irrigation drains and ditches and channels because they just got windblown to the nth degree. Mm. So
I reached out to a mate in Hobart to ask this because I thought, well, I've been to Tasmania 5 times in my life, so I'm probably not the expert. He said exactly that. He said he's going to Barnboogle this weekend, and then he won't go back probably till autumn because it gets increasingly windy through spring and summer can be windy as well. He said like late Feb and March, pretty ideal time to get down to Tasmania. Long, warm days, little rain, so firm greens for Tassie. And good growing conditions.
Okay.
So in terms
Clates is a big advocate of going around grand final time, and any blokes that I've spoken with here in Melbourne who have gone down there to play during the AFL finals have always said it was surprisingly good weather. They had enough light for 36 holes and the wind wasn't dreadful. So that might be my sneaky earlier than you expect time that I'd suggest to go down there for that.
Hmm. I've done Barney probably 3 times in July and August, and I love it. So 3 3-day trips, 9 days of golf. We had 1 day that was a huge amount of rain, but there's only enough light really for 18 to 27 that time of year anyway. So we just sat around drinking coffee until the rain stopped, and because it's winter, there's not really that many people there. You just walk onto the first tee and play. So that's a benefit of, you know, you can dodge if there is bad weather. But 8 of the 9 days we've done down there in winter have been delightful, you know, maybe a bit fresh, but lovely for golf. You walk off, you go into the sports bar, you watch footy all night, finish the night punting on horses from Turf Fontaine. It's, yeah, like that is genuinely for Barnboogle. I don't know about Tasmania at large, but I also was thinking, okay, he's going to go down for his 40th, you say 40th or 50th? I think he said 40th, yeah. So maybe we're doing some stuff that's not golf. But if it's 2025, I've got to be excited because I was like, okay, the AFL team won't be there by then. Now it's 28, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
But 7 Mile Beach will be open. Arm End probably won't be, but depending, end of 25 it could be. But, you know, soon enough it will be. So you're hanging around Hobart alone, you could spend a day or an overnight and go and play Elderslie and Ratho.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for the Cascade Brewery and the Cadbury Factory that are both in sort of West Hobart.
Good suggestions.
Great fun. Cascade Brewery has a tasting room that just has this lovely view over nice Tasmanian scenery, wineries and distilleries. Hit up Mona if that's your thing. There's some really cool bars dotted around the Hobart CBD these days. I think I talked a bit about that after I went down in March for my mate's 40th. Yeah. Even without leaving the surrounds of Hobart, you can have an incredible multifaceted trip.
Yeah, that's a good trip. That'll Bomb and Gouge will enjoy himself down there. Good suggestions. All right. Next one from Wadler. Gents, do we think 7 Mile Beach will have an adverse impact on King Island?
Yes. Absolutely it will.
Yeah, I didn't need 2 seconds to formulate an answer on that. I think it has to. I do have a bit of a fear that the absence of infrastructure and things to do away from golf on King Island will have it as a one and done experience for a lot of people.
Yep.
And the ease of travel, the low cost of travel, the myriad things to do away from golf, the bigger planes, there's a lot in 7 Mile Beach's favour that's going to see people go there rather than Ocean View Wickham, I think.
Yep. Well, some people speculate, will 7 Mile Beach affect Royal Hobart and Tasmania? And yeah, if you're interested in that and you haven't listened to our Tassie and kind of Hobart at large episode, maybe go and have a listen to that. But no, I actually think 7 Mile Beach will be helpful to those two courses if they play their cards right. But I think the fact that you could fly onto the main island of Tassie and you can eventually play 7 Mile, 5 Mile, Amen, Barney Dunes, Lost Farm, and then maybe a selection of your Royal Hobart, your Tasmania, go to Ratho, all that kind of deal. You know, or you can pay twice as much for your flight to get to King Island. You can pay more for your car hire because there's less of it. You can pay significantly more for green fees to play Cape Wickham than to play the Barnboogle courses. And 10 times as often, it's going to be so windy you can't play golf. Like, there's no Cascade Brewery, there's no Mona, there's no Cool Hip Bars in downtown Hobart. There's no, like, I'm concerned for both the courses on, not King Island Bowling Club 9 Hole, that'll be just fine. But the two big, new, expensive modern courses on King Island, I think there's a reason that there's been a large amount of ownership changes in 8 years. There's been a couple more times when one or both of them has been on the market and then hasn't found a buyer and has been pulled. Mm-hmm. I think there's a commercial reason for that. Sometimes I think the golf being really, really good just isn't enough, particularly when the main island of Tasmania is going to be so incredible on so many levels within the next 5 years.
Yeah. That's a good summary. For those who want to go back and listen to Scott's experience in Hobart, that was episode 17 for us. You had been there back in late Feb, early March for...
Yeah, early March 40th. It was for a mate's 40th, yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, I say it was for a mate's 40th. My wife suggests that I just wanted to go on a golf trip and happened to attend his party while I was there. But yeah, however you define it, I both played golf and celebrated a 40th.
Yeah.
All right. For you, Andrew Heffernan. Gents, if you could play 4 courses per state for a golf trip, which would they be? Allow until 2026 to take all those trips to allow for courses under construction or renovation.
All right. Little bag tag Barry tendency coming out of me here, unfortunately.
I tried to piece together courses that would actually be a coherent trip rather than just 4 yes. that will happen to be. You did the same? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got for Victoria?
When RM, Kingston, Vic, and Commonwealth.
Well, so out of the whole of the state of Victoria, that's the 4 courses you would choose.
For the first time visitor, I stayed at Victoria. I didn't go very far. And I just picked the ice out of the sandbelt. Yeah.
Just sandbelt golf. You're not interested in variety.
Well, I could go down the Mornington Peninsula and say that I could go to St. Andrews Beach and I'd also pick Flinders and the Dunes. So I'd get back onto what we were talking about in terms of the weekend away that doesn't break the bank. And I'd probably go play Portsea as a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that sandbelt, just picking the ice out of the sandbelt,
it's hard to go wrong.
Yeah. You're gonna play 72 great holes. They're gonna be presented well. Mm-hmm. Your cab fare is gonna be under $15. You can go to Garden Vale and Brighton and Sandringham and St Kilda and do anything you want to do of a night time, and good food, good booze, good nightlife. So,
I had RM West in Kingston Heath, but then I had National Moona. And depending on whether we wanted to throw in just a ridiculous drive, bingo card at the ready, Port Fairy. You know, it's a long way to go to add one course. But I thought maybe Little Frankston. That'd be a cool thing to see and to do.
Yes.
Different to everything else. But, yeah, look, nothing wrong with just playing the hits on the sandbelt.
Well, Dave Elvins has been at me periodically for about 6 years to go on a 2 to 3 day trip with him down towards Gippsland and go and play Mafra, Yarram, Trafalgar and Leongatha.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never played any of those four courses.
Yeah, okay.
And I see the pictures of Traff and think, I am an idiot. Why have I never been to this place? But, I mean, there's always places that you just don't get to, unfortunately. Mm. But that would... I'm not sure you'd be doing much after 7:30 on a Thursday night down in that neck of the woods. But
best not to eat the mushrooms either.
No.
All right, so what courses you got? What four courses do you have in the state of New South Wales?
I picked Bonnydoon, the Lakes, New South Wales, and I got in the car for the fourth one and went to Newcastle.
Ooh, okay. We're pretty close. So I've got New South Wales, I've got Newcastle, I've got Bonnydoon. I'm noting that we've been given until 2026 to do all these trips. I'm playing the new Royal Sydney.
Yeah, good on you. Well done. Yeah, that was smart. I should have done that. Yes. Yeah, that would be fantastic to see. There's a couple of people I've spoken with who listened to Ben Hillard talking about the substantive change to the routing, the philosophy regarding embracing native vegetation and having a different textural element to that course, and they are very excited by the prospect of that, and they can see the potential. So that could be a showstopper there. As we said in that episode with Ben, if everything lands as they hope it does.
Up to Queensland.
Queensland. Didn't give much time to Queensland. I think I had a multi-day trip at Royal Queensland. I did think, where would I go if I was up on the Goldie for 4 days? And I want to go back and have a look at Hope Island and see if I can see the positives, as Ran suggested. I want to go and see if I can play 16 at the Glades better than your mate.
He's just had a baby and he's resigned his membership for the foreseeable, which is, you know, probably smart, having had babies ourselves and not played golf for much. But yeah, but I think he did birdie it his last round. So
okay,
he slayed the dragon. Just, you know,
just mic drop. He
threw his clubs into the lake and just
thank you.
Yeah,
I'm out.
So the three I had RQ. A 4 day trip at RQ does sound appealing, but I thought three on the Goldie that had a bit of variety. I went with Hope Island, Sanctuary Cove Pines, and the Glades.
Okay, neither of us went to Brookie.
No. No. Again, please refer to that episode for my thoughts on Brookie. All right. So, sorry, you were talking about Adelaide.
Adelaide, I stayed in the same tiny little pocket and I played Grange West, Cooyonga, Royal Adelaide, and Glenelg. I didn't move very far at all there. Someone says you can go and play 3 days at Royal Adelaide and go play your fourth and whatever else you want. I could totally understand that too.
The only thing I have that might divert from that is 2026 again, potentially giving us Kangaroo Island as the option. Darius's course there.
So that could be finished by then. Yeah. So that's that's a ferry from Adelaide, isn't it? Like a 40-minute ferry.
I think you can also fly there, maybe.
Okay. Not sure. I know it's
we could say if we'd done better research, but we didn't, so we can't.
I know it's bigger than I first thought.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
was,
yeah. So. Cool. WA, as previously advertised. I don't know.
Well, I want to go to Sun City, which is north of Trigg Beach. So you drive north past Yanchep, which is really for the greenies and the botanists among us, a really, really important and beautiful little site that slowly but surely seems to be becoming Taylor's Lakes by the water, unfortunately, with a four-lane highway and a shopping centre boasting the same Chemist Warehouse, Super Cheap Auto and Hungry Jack's that you saw 7K back, and you'll see another 7K further up the highway. Flowering gums were really largely, almost exclusively, largely endemic to like a 5-square-mile area in Yanchep 250 years ago, before they were propagated and cultivated and disseminated across mainland Australia. There's a Yanchep rose, Australian native rose, that's native to that area. And Clates was doing a lot of work to Sun City years ago.
Yep.
They haven't been endowed with a huge budget, and they've sort of done it piecemeal over, I'm going to say, more than a decade. But beautiful soil and beautiful topography and some really cool holes there. I went there years ago and really, really enjoyed it. I'd love to go back there, and I'd like to just take the drive north and have a look through all that neck of the woods. Karrinup, Kennedy Bay.
And you have to go see the Australia Green at Mount Lawley.
Well, I was wondering if you would go to Mount Lawley or if you'd go to Lancelin, because I remember Lucas Michelle's photos of Lancelin and thought this could really be something. So I'd just be curious to stick
in there. So just to cover off, there is an airport on Kangaroo Island, and there's flights between Adelaide and Kangaroo Island 5 to 6 days a week. So there you go. Can do that. Fun. I can't name four courses in the Northern Territory, but
no,
I played Darwin Golf Club when I was on a trip up there for work. It's a TWP and surprisingly good. And obviously, big torrential downpours, there needs to be lots of big shapes to move water quickly off the fairways. The day that I played it, there had been, you know, maybe 2 or 3 inches of rainfall in very short order between my plane landing and me teeing off, and the place was immaculate. So the engineering of it works, and there's some really cool holes. And then in Jabiru in Kakadu National Park, where the old uranium mine is, there's a 9-hole course. And it doesn't look very good from the air, but I just thought it'd be cool to play that course one day. But sadly, the reason I was going up to the Territory for work has ended, and thanks to COVID, and then didn't get picked up again. So that might just have to remain a dream for me. ACT, obviously, you'd play Royal Canberra. You'd play Federal. You might play Yuani. And I reckon I would go out near the airport. I remember looking last time I was down there with the family, taking the kids out on a quiet afternoon. There's a really cool looking pitch and putt. I think it might be called Capital Golf Centre. But I've got a soft spot for pitch and putts. So that might be my fourth in the ACT.
I've just looked at the aerial of Jabiru Golf Course.
It's very red.
Well, the greens are green, but the fairways are red.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be cool. That's the kind of stuff that I get off on these days. But the thing that I thought was really cool, and maybe this was the point that Andrew Heffernan was trying to make with this question. There are so many courses that we just named that are either brand new and not open yet, in the case of, say, 7 Mile Amen, Kangaroo Island, or, you know, New South Wales, Royal Sydney and Newcastle all having significant work done in the next handful of years. It really is wild how much very good golf there is in Australia that we will play for the first time in the next
The wrapper's still on it. And if you said, okay, you can't go to those ones that you named in Victoria, all right, I'll go to Huntingdale and I'll go see what OCM have done there. I haven't been to Yarra Yarra since Doak did that stuff. I'll go to Commonwealth and I'll see what the Renaissance guys have done. So that's all still brand new as well. So yeah, it's happening everywhere, which is
Lonsdale, exciting. Fresh out the box, completely different. Yeah, it's we are so lucky, you know, and we, you know, you and I have been embroiled in a debate with some mates about if Australian golf is overrated, and I think that's there's an episode there as well with the right people debating that, because I can see both sides of that argument. But when you look at all the new stuff that's being rolled out and then how good all of our golden age classics are, there's an argument to be made that, no, it's just really, really, really good.
Yeah.
All right. Jonathan Becker, who is fantastic. He's in Ohio, Jonathan. He's a mate of ours. And we will often wake up on the east coast of Australia, and while we've been asleep, it's been late at night on the east coast of the US, and there's these great lengthy reviews of our episodes that may or may not be powered by some mind-altering substances, liquid and otherwise. And I love waking up and reading what Becca thought of the episode and some questions he might have. So he's asked us this one, which I think is a great question. So he was down here about 2013 on a trip. Did we hint at the, we did on the Barnboogle episode, Becca's experience in the spa at Lost Farm?
Yes. We with did. The jants and the gowns and yes.
And yes. Yes, we did. Now that's a unique experience on an Aussie golf trip.
I didn't anticipate that we would have more than two dozen episodes of this podcast when I first envisaged recording. And I think this is 29 now. And we've got a lot to do yet. Still conscious we haven't done PK, haven't done Wickham, got some other things to do, Royal Adelaide. Hopefully we have an episode with Jonathan Becker.
Yeah.
I would really like that.
Yeah.
I think that would be a...
Because he came down, he played all the great courses, but then after hours, he absolutely just blew the doors off it as well.
Yeah.
Which I think he spent multiple nights at Revolver in Melbourne when he was down there playing the Sandbelt all day.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, just a different way to combine passions on a golf trip. But so Becker asked us, a decade ago when I visited, everyone talked about Barnboogle Dunes being a better course than Kingston Heath. But with the work and improvements that have happened to the Heath since then, is it now laying claim to being a better course than Barnboogle Dunes?
You'll get an immediate and resounding yes from a lot of people. You'll get a solid argument from some other people that think that Barney's better. It's undeniable that the Heath has improved. And I think if we were to sit here and try and identify what characterises Kingston Heath, it might be the fact that there's just this process of ongoing, continual improvement and refinement and sound decision-making. I was there 3 weeks ago, vegetation management, tree management, mowing lines, even just the little seam that exists between that east side of the 12th hole and the furrows, the little new nine-holer.
Mm-hmm.
That's softened and improved, and there's going to be some infrastructure near the start and finish point of that little nine-holer, that par three that's, I think, slated for commencement next week. Yeah, it's hard at that pointy end. Some people will say that they've fallen down the ranking lists a bit. Some people don't pay attention to the ranking lists, but some people will say they've fallen down a little bit, and it won't be through any fault of their own. It'll be through the emergence of places like Wickham or Lost Farm or the improvement at another course and club. They're definitely better than they were when Jonathan was here.
I think the Heath might not have anything as good as 4, 7, say 12 at Barnboogle Dunes. But I think the Heath also doesn't have anything as weak as 8 and 16 at the Dunes. Barnboogle Dunes, obviously that is not the Dunes, the Dunes. I think probably like Kingston Heath doesn't even have a hole potentially that's... So people like 2 at Barnboogle Dunes, not a bad hole, but it's probably, it would be the 19th best hole at or the 20th best hole at Kingston Heath. I think that the Heath is just, if Barnboogle Dunes is a greatest hits album, Kingston Heath is just a, you know, like a Radiohead album that's perfectly put together and sequenced and edited. And some people don't dig that. Some people like the hits. It's going to vary. But, I mean, we polled our listeners on Instagram and, what, 40%-ish of them thought that the Heath was better than Royal Melbourne West.
Yes.
There's probably a decent amount of them would also agree it's better than Barnboogle Dunes. I think it is true that Kingston Heath has got incrementally better in the last decade. And the condition at Barnboogle Dunes might have slipped a bit. You know, it's obviously the bunkers are an ever-shifting organism at Barnboogle Dunes. The wind reshapes them year to year. You look at early photos of the seventh hole and there's fingers of turf going down into the sand on the bunker on the left, and now it's just kind of a big saucer with a crisp lip because the wind has decided that's what it's going to be. So, yeah, I think it does drive home that these courses do change with the seasons. But then again, you know, Tom Doak's got that point that he's made when people have said, oh, this course has been changed since you rated it, and so your rating's out of date. And his view is that a course isn't going to go up or down by more than one point based on those sorts of things, because it's the terrain and the turf and the routing account for most of it. Obviously, that hasn't changed at either course.
Yeah.
How are you splitting 10 rounds between Barney Dunes and Kingston Heath?
Probably 6-4 Barney.
Yeah. I would have said maybe 5-5. I think they're so close in quality and I enjoy them both and they're so different. I'll happily split down the middle.
Yeah. When you get to Kingston Heath and you're walking along playing a particular hole, like you might have got a good drive away on the second, and you're ambling along and you get a glimpse of the third and think, oh, cool, we're playing that next. And you're going down four and you see the pear trees right at the fifth green and you think, oh, playing the par five, oh, playing the par three fifth next. And you've got a cool long shot into seven ahead, got a cool approach into eight ahead. Before you know it, you're at 10, which is a hole that you've been thinking about all day. And those moments just keep coming and coming and coming through the whole round. And
yep.
I like lots of our listeners, there'll be men and women listening that think, yep, I do that too. I think about that shot on the car trip on the way to the course, and I think about that shot on the trip home after I've finished my round. And yeah, Kingston Heath packs stacks of moments like that into an 18-hole experience. And Barney does too, but Kingston Heath definitely does. It's a special place.
Mm-hmm. All right, last one. And we don't actually know who this is from because the person who sent it got locked out of his account. So he sent it from his business account. So shout out Cucina Mexico.
Yes.
Which I think is a catering company in Melbourne. The food looks pretty good from their Instagram. But we were asked, which clubs have the best clubhouse culture? It's a great question. If plays rained out, where would you want to hang out?
I really, really liked this question, and it made me think of something that Clate said a while ago, because he would go to cafes and bars and sit there and chat and order a bottle and do some people watching and have a shared plate with a wine or something like that and think, well, I can just hang here. And I don't ever have that feeling at a golf club. I never have that feeling at a golf club.
Mm-hmm.
And you perhaps should have a bit more of a social convivial air. I have a lot of fun in a clubhouse post round, and I can think of plenty of places that I've been where I think, oh, I don't want to leave here. This is really, really good, but it's not a cool place to go hang as other locations would be. I reckon it's highly people dependent.
Yeah, one of my first thoughts was like wherever my mates are, they'll do. Yeah. Although,
so for all the knocks on the Qantas Club experience and the aesthetic at the clubhouse at the National, there were days when I was a member there where everyone had been beaten up by the wind, or there'd been two pins on Moona that were just diabolical. And you'd have everyone from all these tables merging, and you have to go up to the bar to grab drinks. And so there'd be seven or eight people just standing beside one another, chatting away and drinks in hand and having, what did you do? And how did that turn out? Oh, I heard someone in your group five-putted. and that was really, really cool. But yeah, I think if I had my own golf facility, I'd probably try and get someone in to do something to a clubhouse that made it a distinctly different kind of experience to what we have most of the time at our golf clubs.
You know who's actually done that is Lonsdale. I know some of the local old-time members of the club were annoyed by what that is, but the new clubhouse is like a really cool bar and restaurant. The aesthetic of a cool Melbourne bar restaurant, lots of concrete, lots of bare metal glass. Doesn't look or feel like a golf clubhouse, but it looks and feels like the kind of place you want to sit and have a feed and beers. And that's one option. I think I want to shout out Royal Sydney just because that clubhouse is incredible in terms of what it has in it. Crucially, full-size billiard table. Rooms upstairs, good array of beers on tap. That's a pretty good one. We used to go to an annual dinner there for the interclub competition I've referenced before. And after the dinner, it was kind of this game of cat and mouse of the Royal Sydney staff trying to get all of us out of the clubhouse and everyone else just kind of going from room to room and around the bar trying to be the last one to be shooed out by the staff after the dinner. It's a cool place. And the other one I want to shout out, because I probably won't ever shout them out for the golf course, like no shade, but it's Pymble in Northern Sydney. One of the really cool things about Pymble, Maddie, is that the first tee, the seventh tee and the 13th tee are all at the clubhouse. So they do a 3-tee start, which means the field basically all finishes right on top of each other. And that clubhouse deck on a nice afternoon is just heaving like you describe at the Nash.
Yeah.
It's a really community type club. I think more of their members probably live within 5Ks than most clubs. So yeah, that's one that I really like that about Pymble.
I'd go up every year to New South Wales Golf Club as a part of the weekend where I do City to Surf with a couple of friends. Mm-hmm. And we'd invariably play New South on the Saturday. And that always had a great feel on a late Saturday afternoon after their competition field had come in. And we'd look down at blokes who were above the hole on 18 and we'd all chuckle and think, see, 5-1 to get that down in 2 from there, or even money, he's got 3 putts. Or yeah, there was a great energy in that. And I don't think it was just because we were away on a weekend. It always delivered there.
I also think in favor of my club, there's a lot to be said for just putting out 2 or 3 blocks of cheese and some crackers on Saturday afternoon when everyone's coming in from the comp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a little thing, but I do enjoy that.
Cheese wheels, yeah. The number of mates who have commented positively on that, it never ceases to amaze me. So,
all right, that's us. We're fresh out of questions.
Thank you to everyone who sent them in. It was great mulling over all of them. So homework for me is to scope out a potential guest for a Northern Beaches of Sydney episode. Take Tom Beecham out for an 18 hole round and start to get our state of origin lineup sorted against the rest of the country. Have this nagging feeling we're going to get done. But anyway,
And Clates has agreed to come on again before the end of the year, which is sensational. I'm pumped for that. I've actually just started a little note in my phone of random questions I want to ask Clates when he comes on, such as what's the longest he's gone in the last 20 years without touching a club?
I can't imagine.
If it's 10 days, I'll be staggered.
I was going to say, I can't imagine he's had a fortnight in his life in the last 50 years where he hasn't touched a club. I'd be genuinely shocked if that happened. And talking of Clates, Lloyd Cole is the other homework item for us. So
Yes.
The notion that we'd have a two dozen series of podcasts as a chapter book on our best courses and nothing more, well and truly been blown out of the water by now.
Yeah. And if you're young, like I'm, if you're a young person, I'm 40. I hadn't heard of Lloyd Cole either until I met him. But do yourself a favor and listen to the album Rattlesnakes.
Rattlesnakes.
Rattlesnakes is my favorite album. The single Rattlesnakes is sensational. Forest Fire. That album is full of some of Lloyd's best songs. So you'll get a good idea whether you like Lloyd. And as I said, he's touring later this year, December, January in New Zealand and Australia. I'm not sure if it's December or January that he's here, but worth going to see.
I think he's here mid-December because I think he's going to play the Sandbelt, not play the Sandbelt Invitational. He will attend the Sandbelt Invitational.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
So show notes will have something for him and a whole array of other little links there.
Yeah, we've promised a lot. We might have to go through and audit that. But thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with Matt. I'm really keen to do a golf course episode again. It feels like it's been forever since we did a course. Yeah. So I've got one in mind. I don't want to say it out loud because then we're committed to it. But I'm really keen to get back into the weeds of a golf course.